This is 21st Century Reformation at 21stcr.org.
Let me make another point, too, about this morality issue, because I know that comes up a lot. If you don't have the Ten Commandments or you don't have the law, then you have no morality. And I think that that's a great misunderstanding. Again, how is it that this law of love, people say, oh, well, that wouldn't mean much. Actually, it means everything to God. God looks at it, and he's saying, love one another. This is the key. This is the key. And actually, when Paul said in Galatians, the fifth chapter, that the whole law is fulfilled in this, I think he's able to say, here, look, think about it this way. If you love your neighbor, are you going to be killing your neighbor? We think not. Or if you love your neighbor, are you going to be stealing his ox?
Exactly.
I think not.
Exactly.
If you love your neighbor, will you bear false witness against him? No. And this goes on and on and on. And then I think by any measure, we have to realize, sometimes people say, well, we just hang on to the Ten Commandments. No, we're still not getting there. We're still not giving the primacy to Christ. Because think about it again. If you say, well, I'm going to let the rest of the law go, and we'll hang on to the Ten Commandments. Okay, well, fine then. Look at all that's not in the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
Those who would disapprove of homosexuality.
Yes.
Which one of the Ten Commandments addresses that question?
Exactly.
I don't think there's one that does. And there are many other issues. We'll say, well then, how do we get to this? Do we get to it through Moses? No, we don't get to it through the Ten Commandments. We don't get to it through Moses. We get through it. We get to these matters through Christ and through those he commissioned to teach this message, the gospel.
Yes.
So we can read Paul, we can read Peter, we can read James, we can read John, we can read all these writings and wonderful things, and we learn the moral message of Jesus Christ. And I'm happy for Moses, and I'm happy for what all went on back there, but we have come to a new arrangement, a new covenant, and we have to understand Moses is not our teacher now. Jesus is. I thought about this the other day. It's lovely. But you know, on the what we call the Mount of Transfiguration, you have this amazing, wonderful story. Here are three of the disciples with Jesus, and Jesus is transfigured. It's later referred to as a vision. It's an amazing thing. But he's transfigured, and in this vision, he is seen with Moses and with Elijah. And Moses, of course, the giver of the law, as it were. God chose him to give that law. And here's Elijah, some would consider, if not the greatest, certainly one of the greatest of all the prophets. And here is Peter and the other disciples that came along with Jesus. They see the three of them up there, Jesus and Moses and Elijah, and they are just absolutely carried away. Oh, my lands, we're going to put up a tent for Moses, and we'll put up a tent for Elijah, and one for Jesus, and we're all going to stay here, and it's going to be wonderful. And I can just see Peter or some of the others saying, I'm going to get to talk to Moses. This is going to be great. Or I'm going to get to talk to Elijah. I can't believe it. While they're thinking in those terms, a voice, a cloud overshadows them, and a voice speaks from the cloud with words that we all Christians today need to hear. The words are these: this is my beloved son. This is my son. You hear him.
Exactly.
I think, doesn't that speak to us?
That's a good point.
Don't we realize, I'm not Moses' disciple.
Yes.
I'm not. This was the case even for the Jews on the mountain there. The law was indeed, as the writer of Hebrews later is going to say in the 8th chapter, passing away. That's going by the wayside back there. But this new covenant in Jesus Christ is adequate. It is completely the will of God for his people today. And I'm happy we can read good things in the law, and I'm happy we can read good things that were brought by Moses. And even in the Ten Commandments, there's some good things. We have to look into all this matter. But when it comes to us today, I'm with that voice that spoke on the mount. This is my son. You hear him.
Yes.
I know whose disciple I am. I'm not Moses' disciple.
Mm-hmm.
I am the disciple of Jesus Christ. I think that's important to all of us.
The mistake was made, you see, by some of the large Sabbatarian denominations. They looked at the Ten Commandments and they saw the Sabbath and the Fourth Commandment. And they said, this is the moral law. What they had not paid attention to was the fact that the Sabbath is actually not the part of the moral law. Mm-hmm. It's part of a trio of calendar observances. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you look at the 10, 11 other places where Sabbath is mentioned, along with new moons and holy days, what they should have said is, oh, I see, part of the calendar is in the Ten Commandments. That's fair, because this is for Israel. It doesn't follow that this was part of the eternal moral law of God. The failure was to connect the Sabbath with its two companions 11 times in the Old Testament, and in the only occurrence in which Paul mentions Sabbath ever, he links it immediately with new moons and holy days.
Wow.
Now that fundamental structural mistake led to another mistake. They then said that Paul must have said, don't let anybody judge you in holy days. That's correct. New moons and holy days.
Yes.
Don't let anybody judge you in A, B, and A. Whereas ordinary readers who were not touched by this particular form of teaching said, no, it's obviously A, B, and C. It was. The failure again, you see, was to not see that that fourth command was just part of the calendar. Mm. You couldn't list in the Ten Commandments the whole system,
whole calendar,
but you put in this one weekly Sabbath. Mm. But then your brain should then join the dots correctly from that weekly Sabbath to holy days and new moons.
Yeah.
Equal status. If you're going to insist on keeping the weekly Sabbath, logically you must also keep the holy days. And logically, equally, you must insist on celebrating in some form the new moon. So I met somebody the other day who said that he and his wife were now keeping the new moons, and they were
goodness.
Closer to God than
oh,
ever.
My land. Oh, yes, my
and
goodness.
I felt like saying, yes, but what does your neighbor think as he watches you in the beginning of the month, you know, gazing at the, you know. That's the misrepresentation of the faith. And look at the burden of people who have to give up their jobs to keep the Feast of Tabernacles.
Mm.
Is God really putting that kind of burden on the lady in Malawi, for instance, who quietly told me one day that she was a Seventh-day Adventist, and here it was a Saturday, and she was mopping the floor.
Mm.
Very few people in Malawi have a job.
Mm.
And she looked at me with pain in her eyes, and she said, you know, if I tell my pastor that I'm mopping the floor and earning a living on Saturday, I'm going to be in bad trouble.
Wow.
And I was happy to tell her, lady, you know, really, Jesus is not going to condemn you for earning an honest penny on the Sabbath. If you study Paul very carefully, Sabbatarianism, Sabbath keeping, it may sound wonderful, but it isn't actually according to the New Covenant.
Well, that's the reason I was saying earlier, many of our Protestant friends who want to keep the Sabbath and are elated about keeping certain holy days, and they say, oh, this is beautiful and it's wonderful. We have to realize that sense of euphoric religion is not a guide to what is really good in the sight of God. In the high churches, and certainly in among our Catholic friends, they're going to go to church and keep very high ritual liturgy, and they come away saying, it's beautiful, I love it, I feel so lifted up. But it's not, I think we would agree, that liturgy, that form of program is not what the people of the New Testament would have had in mind at all. We've got to realize God's ways really are best. Not just what we think or what makes us feel good. Or what we think, oh, this is really nice or beautiful or pleasant. No. God's ways are what is really beautiful.
You're absolutely right. Any view that is taken on board by a large collection of people agreeing is self-authenticating,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We're all doing this together.
Right,
then takes on an authority that is terrifyingly crippling, actually, because it's very hard for people to rethink any of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten now the enormous power of tradition behind it. And that's what made Jesus so upset with the system. In vain you worship. A lot of what you're doing as religion is simply tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And you are erring, Jesus said to the Sadducees, not understanding Scripture well. I think that's a permanent lesson for all of us.
Let me ask you this, with regard to Sabbath keeping, and a lot of people recognize Jesus went into the synagogues on the Sabbath.
Of course.
We find occasions where Paul went into the synagogues on the Sabbath. How can we better understand what they were doing?
Oh, what they were doing was going where the audience was.
Mm.
I mean, the gospel was going to the Jews first. We know that.
Mm.
The Jews are God's people. They're intended to work for God, especially. They're very special. And so it's, of course, entirely normal. And Jesus was a Jew. He was circumcised on the eighth day. There was nowhere else to go. There was no Sunday observing church at all at that point. But one cannot judge those things, though, without reference to Paul's later discussion. It's the balance of Scripture, isn't it? When we get to 1 Corinthians 16, we do find an interesting thing, that on every first day of the week, they're being asked to treasure their money. And it may be that the best commentators are right when they say that Paul is in fact saying there, every Sunday, not just on Sunday, but every Sunday, you should be putting your money into the church treasury according to your own judgment, as you see fit, according to the way you've prospered, so that there be no collections when I come. Now, if in fact he's just saying, store it up there at home, it doesn't seem to get round the difficulty of the collections when he comes. So I'm not going to push this as definitively right, but there's a number of good commentators who felt that there's a very clear reference to every Sunday. This is more than reasonable. The eighth day is the day of the resurrection. Again, back to Luke 23. Today is the third day since the crucifixion, that Sunday. And a few verses earlier, the angels had said, don't you remember he said he was going to be killed and raised on the third day? I'm going to insist that the resurrection was on the third day. And the reckoning is inclusive. Today, tomorrow, and the third day. So Sunday, yesterday, and the third day. Is it clear? Now, they will pull the one from Matthew, which is an entire exception, the 3 days and three nights, using the one odd exception to outreach the rest of them, to outdo the rest of them. That's not a good way to go about it, because we know that from Jewish idiom, it's possible to speak of three whole days as parts of days. So go with the massive evidence. The third day today. Sunday is the third day since Friday. And they rested on that very Sabbath that they were preparing for, not two different Sabbaths. That is to turn Scripture into a nightmare of complexity.
I was just thinking while you were talking, you've written a book on these issues, and I think it's a very fine book. The title, can you give me the title exactly?
Yes, The Law, the Sabbath, and New Covenant Christianity. Yeah. I think it's on our website at Restoration Fellowship. It's right there. Just download it, you know, it costs nothing at all. Yeah. It was our attempt to get at what seems to me a more reasonable freedom here, having suffered, I think, under our own ignorance, and trying to do good for God.
You've been there and done that.
It doesn't make us right, of course. But certainly I can tell you that life is a lot more enjoyable without the restraints of the law of Moses mixed with the new covenant.
Well, it must be very heavy to wake up in the morning worried about the conduct and how you conduct certain of these issues that actually related to a different covenant than we're under now.
That's right.
And a covenant that Paul's going to caution us, don't go there, because, you know, if you say, I'm going to keep this part of the law or that part, Paul's going to say, you are bound to do the entire law.
Right. So that's our fundamental question. What is this whole law which you shouldn't keep?
That's right.
I love that statement. Let's get this clear. If you're going to get circumcised physically, then you're going to have to keep the whole law. All right, define that whole law, which don't keep on pain. Do not go there.
Don't do this.
I want clear answers on those things. And I think it's those identity markers, as James Dunn has said so well in his writings, those things that mark you out as a Jew, you know, Sabbath keeping, calendar, food laws, and so on. Those are things which in the New International Faith we don't need to divide over at all.
And I think Paul, in the reference there was to Galatians 5 and 3, and then also to Galatians 3:17, I think, where he says, you know, you're under a curse. Whoever wants to be under the law, you're under a curse, because at the end of the reading of the law, there was also a curse pronounced, which said, cursed is anybody.
Yes.
Everyone, anybody who does not continue in all the works of the law to do this. And so I think, you know, and we can't say, well, we should keep all we can. That's not what Paul's saying. Yeah. Paul is saying it's all or nothing. If you're going to, tell me, you that want to be under the law, don't you hear the law? This isn't the way to go. It's not the thing to do. So, and I think if you're going to tell me we keep the law, then fine, but I'm going to go by Galatians 3:17 and Galatians 5 and 3, and I'm going to say, okay, then we're going to keep every bit of the law, every bit of it, and including the penalties that should come against folks and say, well, we can't do that anymore. No, I think if you're going to keep the law, then keep the law. And I'm amazed at those who say, well, you must keep the Sabbath. And then they do not, they're not willing to come up and say, and we're going to enforce that. No, but that's part of the law as well.
That's
the
right.
Enforcement, is also.
It's one verse in Galatians, again, we did mention, which is extremely striking, where Paul says, if I were still preaching circumcision in the flesh, why am I being persecuted?
Excellent.
So somebody's trying to say, well, Paul, you know, Paul's a good chap. He's preaching circumcision.
Oh, he was not.
I am not doing it. That should show the difference in the new and the old, right? In its starkest, most blatant form, that permanent thing in Genesis 17, where even, we should mention this, a Gentile, if he wants to be fully part of Israel, he's got to be circumcised. So he can't keep the Passover.
Yes, yes.
Isn't that terrible? What was it? Moses' children? God threatened to kill them if they didn't get circumcised.
Yeah.
Paul clearly is saying the opposite.
Yeah.
Then what else is different as between the old and the new? We need to explore that whole thing.
Yeah. Well, and realizing that if circumcision is the seal and the sign of the law, when Paul addresses circumcision, he's addressing the gate, so to speak, through which we come under the law or into the law. And Paul says, I think that's why he's saying in Galatians 5, you know, don't you realize that whoever's going to be circumcised, you're going to walk through that gate of circumcision, you are now obliged to keep the entire law. No exceptions. Paul doesn't do this thing about, now this part of the law we're going to keep, this part of the law we're going to keep, this part we're not going to keep. Paul, you don't find that in the Bible. We find it among people today who want to bring to us a law-keeping, semi-law-keeping concept and propose that they're doing good things, when in reality, I don't think it's good and it's not biblical. Show me which ones Paul said to keep and which ones said, oh, we don't do that. You know, I don't know about that.
There are two other points which you mentioned, that Paul does try to get to Ephesus for the feast. Of course,
yes, of course.
The audience is there.
Yes.
But note that he also takes the disciples out of the synagogue. We don't hear much about this in some quarters. When he goes to the synagogue, some are interested in what Paul's doing, others are refusing him. So he removes them from the synagogue and teaches them in the lecture house of Tyrannus, which is probably open from 11 to 1, you know, during the siesta hour. That's very clear. So it's a mistake to say that Paul is pushing them all back in the synagogue. No, John's Gospel says they got kicked out if they believed in the Messiah. The other point is the millennium. Yes, you can have a Jewish constitution there, people keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, but you've also got people offering physical sacrifices.
Yes.
So let's be consistent.
Yes.
If the millennium is the model for what you do today, then you better be keeping those physical sacrifices as well. And how do you know that Jesus is keeping the Feast of Tabernacles now? I don't know that he is. I don't know that as an immortal person in the kingdom, you need to be keeping it. Consistency would demand, though, that if you're going to take the millennium as your model, then you're going to have to do all the other things.
Then you better get busy with
building a temple and having sacrifices and doing all of that as well.
Well, it's the whole law or nothing.
Yeah.
And that's what Paul gives us as an alternative. Today we're being given a different alternative by many of our friends. They're saying it's part of the law.
Yes.
And this part and that part, whatever we decide, we tell you, this is what you're going to do.
It's divisive.
But Paul is not going to do that. The Bible doesn't do it.
Paul, I think if you were here today, would remind us of 1 Corinthians 1:18, where he says, I wish above all things, brothers and sisters, let's get this clear, that you all say the same thing.
Precisely.
That there be no divisions and judgments among you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. We are not there yet.
And he speaks in another place, as I teach everywhere, in every church. Paul was very consistent. Very wonderful and presented it all everywhere. Beautiful. And I'm with Paul. I'm with Jesus. I'm happy about Moses, but he had his day. He did what God wanted him to do, and now we're with Jesus. And I, above all, am with that voice that spoke on that mount.
I like that.
That said, this is my son. You hear him.
It's me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing these things. I've enjoyed it immensely.